Good morning or afternoon or evening or I don't know what other time of day it might be. I'm Chase Cunningham, Dr. Cunningham, if you want to be formal. Dr. Zero Trust is just another moniker, which is cooler. More too many doctors in there. Anyway, back after the Thanksgiving holiday. Hopefully you folks were able to have a good time, and if you do celebrate, do the American thing and eat too much and hang out with your family or not with your family. Mine was great because love my family, but none of the extended family came around and it was pretty awesome. Not having to deal with all that other stuff, like just eat and take your nap and watch football. It's great. Anyway, back to work. Lots of new stuff coming along. And there's some content we're going to cover, but as always, when I can, I like to jump in and immediately do some sort of open source red teamy pen testy. That's not really a word, but red team pen testing sort of stuff. And let me tie this to an article that recently came out. This is where the problem lies. I think if you're really honest with what's going on in the space, is this literally is how simple this is. And oh, by the way, I'm not going to tell you where to go get it, but you can figure it out yourself. I was playing with a GitHub system that has a built-in LLM where you can have it build Google Dorks for you. And you literally go in there and just go, I want a Google Dork to find open port, blah, blah, blah on the internet for this type of controller. And it'll build the Dork and you run it to Google and you're done. So the commoditization of compromised activity is so big, or excuse me, of attack sort of tools, tactics, and technologies is so big now because of all this LLM stuff. I mean, we're pretty much putting a pseudo nation state level capability in the hands of every single person that uses the internet. Because, you can have some crazy cool nation state level, super amazing quantum fucking hack or whatever. But in reality, the majority of the time, if you look, even when the DNC and RNC and all these other orgs have been hacked, it's phishing and bad passwords and basic stuff. And we're just making it super easy to do that. So let me pull my glasses off, which I won't be able to see a damn thing, but I don't want anybody to get the reflection off my glasses and me to get, racked up for it. I'm not doing anything illegal, by the way, folks. Like, trust me, I know the line that I can walk here. So there's an article that was published, and let me find the exact article here for you. Yes. So there's two articles. One was City of Hendersonville, North Carolina, targeted in cybersecurity attack. So let's table that for right now. Then there's another one in dark reading, cyber attack on Pennsylvania Water Authority disrupts OT gear. Okay, so this is a water control system. The booster station shut off its automated system and moved to a manual system once alarm sounded the breach. So good for them that they responded to this, but you'll get the point I'm getting to in a second. So this past weekend, last weekend, the Aliquippa, I think, municipal water supply located in Pittsburgh or near Pittsburgh, which is a large city with lots of people, experienced a cyber attack after one of its booster stations was hacked by an Iranian-based cyber group. The group, known as Cyber Avengers, hacked a system known as Unitronics. We'll get into that in just a second, which is components that are Israeli owned. So this is kind of tied to the whole Israeli conflict that's going on. That technology monitors water pressure. The station was shut down during the attack, and a message appeared on the screen that says, "You've been hacked. Down with Israel. Every equipment made in Israel is a Cyber Avengers legal target." And there's a screenshot of that in here. The booster station that was attacked monitors and regulates pressure for Raccoon and Potter Townships, towns around Pittsburgh. Chairman of the board for directors of the Municipal Water Authority, say that three times fast, said. It was shut down automatically, operation resumed manually. So, okay, not a giant thing, but here's the problem. Let's go look around. So, this was, and it says right here in the article, Unitronics. Now, all you got to do is do one or two little crafted queries, which I did, and guess what? I find Unitronics. Now, how many Unitronics things do I find on the internet that are talking to the internet that have exposed ports? And the weird thing is, the port number for this Unitronics thing is a really high port. It's a non-standard port. At any time when you're doing red team pen testing, blah, blah, blah stuff, if you see a weird non-standard port, there's probably something behind it, and it's probably misconfigured. In the world, according to what's just super easy to find, there's about 1,789 of these things. So nearly 2,000. In the US, there's about 216. Now, going further into that in the US, I'm getting down to, I see about 216 that are out there that have the same weird port. Almost all of them are on this port number way at the top. And looking at the cities that have those systems, which is going to be their water control, same stuff. This is not going to be different from somewhere else. But somewhere along the way, there's connections that go on there to other systems. Guess what? Dallas is in there. Dallas recently had a giant compromise that went down. This is a water control system for Dallas. And all I've got to do is do a little bit of clickety clicks. And here I go. Like, I can see the Dallas stuff. And it's really, really clear and clean to see what's going on right there. I'm not going to put this stuff out because I don't want to wind up in jail. But I see PCOM controllers. I see PLC names. I see unique identifiers. Like, it took me, and I did this right before I started this session. It took me like, I would say 8 to 11 minutes to figure this stuff out and go after it. And then all you have to do is go off and do your Googling. And guess what? You can find out all of the cool things that the weird port that's tied to this Unicom system has, that there's diagrams of it. Like, the manufacturer put this stuff out and said, here's the diagrams for this water control system, typically how it's set up. Here's how the connections are put together. Like, this is the issue that we're going to continue to face. And I don't know about y'all, but I would sure as hell consider water pressure and water supply a critical infrastructure component. And I'm one dude at my house with nothing to do. Well, I got shit to do, but with something to do. And I can find this out in a matter of minutes. What is stopping the next thing from happening? And you could go so far down the rabbit hole on this that it would eat people's lunch. And I mean, I'm looking at the, you know, because it's open source research and because this stuff is published, oh, and this is great because it comes from the actual manufacturer. Like, here's the diagram of where all this stuff is connected. And oh, by the way, there is the diagram. And the best part is it talks about behind this switch with this weird port and protocol number and this strange protocol capability. Literally, the diagram says unmanaged switch. So, whoops. Yeah. And the other thing to note here too, though, is this would be a simple fix. But because not enough people are really concerned about it or doing anything about it, and we're all worried about crazy other fucking AI hacking methodologies and, I don't know, unicorn binary rainbow riding motherfuckers or whatever, it's not making a difference. You can fix this in, I say, 11, 20 minutes, this could be fixed. But will it? No. Now, let's go back to the Hendersonville one, which was also interesting. Make sure I find the right article. So there's the one there, and then Hendersonville. Now look, this is, I mean, you can probably hear me typing here, right? Hendersonville. Oh, look, in Hendersonville, North Carolina, 7 things that are out there that have got weird controls and configurations. One's a firewall in front of something else. And of those 7, the really weird port ones are 1, 2, 3, 5 of those. So again, how long did that take me? And this was Hendersonville that got hit in North Carolina, and I'm doing Hendersonville stuff again there. So if we don't fix the basics, all this other super cool, sexy stuff we're doing, it's pretty much for naught. And you can, you know, folks can hate on the zero trust methodology and strategy all day long, but the real big takeaway that you should take away is, number one, it's about you and your organization, what you need. No vendor can provide you that. They can provide you technologies you can use, but they can't provide that. And then on the other side, this is strategic stuff. You remove where the adversary would be able to cause you problems. So there you go. There's an article in Digital Insurance. What does cybersecurity look like for an insurer? And the best part of the thing is that there's a picture of an insurance person with their head on the desk. Looks like they've had a bad day. I can't get behind the paywall, but I kind of got to the gist of the article. And really what it talks about is just that the insurance industry is looking at cyber as more of a colossal pain in the ass than it is looking at it as here's a great way that we can help people. How much longer will it be before this market implodes on itself? I don't see how it could keep going the way that it is, because the insurers are getting fed up with it as well. Yeah. Hacker News has got a really cool one about North Korea's Lazarus Group. This was November 30th. So as of today, North Korea's Lazarus Group rakes in $3 billion from cryptocurrency hacks. So if you're ever sitting around wondering, well, gosh, the U.S. has put all these restrictions and we've put all these illegal things on North Korea, and how do they build nukes? It's because they're hacking their way across the planet and funding their illegal activities with this cryptocurrency stuff. And $3 billion in a country like North Korea, where people are so poor, they actually have to eat grass to stay alive, goes towards the nuclear program. It doesn't go towards feeding the populace, doesn't go towards helping people in social services or whatever else. Think Kim Jong-un gives a fuck if 100,000 people freeze to death? Nope. He's building nukes. And how does he do that? Well, he funds it with cryptocurrency theft. Threat actors from the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, DPRK, are increasingly targeting the cryptocurrency sector since 2017. Basically, what it talks about is privileged access to resources, whatever else. And here's the funny part. The disclosure of this sort of giant number comes as the U.S. Treasury Department announced increased sanctions against Sinbad, a virtual currency mixer that has been put to use by North Korea to launder those ill-gotten proceeds. So good job, federal government, for trying to put a Band-Aid on an arterial bleed. Huzzah. The threat actors from the country are estimated to have stolen over $3 billion worth of crypto assets over the past 6 years. I wonder if any of that came from Sam Bankman-Fried. I wonder if he like cut him a check. With about $1.7 billion plundered in this last year alone, a majority of those stolen assets are used directly to fund the Hermit Kingdom's weapons of mass destruction and ballistic missile programs. Fucking shocker. Mm-hmm. $1.1 billion of that was stolen in hacks of the DeFi protocols, making North Korea one of the driving forces behind DeFi hacking that intensified in last year. A report published by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security as part of its analytic exchange program earlier also highlighted the Lazarus Group's exploitation of DeFi protocols. So Reported Future, which always has great stuff, has got some stuff in here. Go read this, check it out. But those morons that will say, oh, well, crypto's unhackable, print this thing out and bind it with bricks and then smash them in the skull with it, because that's stupid. Anything is hackable. Everything is hackable. It just is what it is, especially when you've got a nation state that's found an easy route to market that can fund their nuclear program. Oh, and because there is some sort of cover their ass within cryptocurrency, it's a really good thing for them. I mean, this is illicit, bad nation state, sort of wet dream of illicit finance. And it's going to keep coming on. Yeah. So there's also an article in Dark Reading, Jeffrey Schwartz, former Uber CISO, speaks out after 6 years on data breach. Joe Sullivan arrived at a sentencing hearing on May 4th of this year, prepared to go to jail, had the judge not gone with a parole board's recommendation of probation. A federal jury convicted the CISO on two charges of fraud for failing to alert regulators of 2016 security breach, but Sullivan was spared having to serve any federal pound you in the ass prison time. Instead, Judge William Orrick of the U.S. District Court for the Northern District of California sentenced Sullivan to 3 years of probation, 200 hours of community service, and a $50,000 fine. Oh, sure. Prosecutors were seeking 15 months of prison time for the charges alleged by the FTC. And it only affected 50 million people's records. So, yeah. I mean, the dude actually, Joe Sullivan, does a pretty good job here of being honest about what's going on. And he said he had to keep his mouth shut for quite a while. In getting the minimum sentence, Sullivan said he was vindicated. The judge said, we, his team at Uber, did an amazing job of the investigation. Okay, I mean, you're supposed to. That's kind of your job, but fine, whatever. We followed our playbook. Again, that's your job. You're supposed to. What people don't understand is the company had D&O, directors and officers, insurance policies. Well, there's that evil term that pops up all the time. We had a data breach response policy that designated a specific lawyer we were supposed to call. The team called in that lawyer and called in PR. I looped in the CEO and kept him up to date. So lots of CYA going on there. You call in the lawyers, you do the thing. It is what it is. Here's where things get funny to me. So now, 6 years later, Sullivan advises other CISOs and companies about navigating their responsibilities and disclosing breaches, especially as the new SEC stuff is set to take effect. Sullivan says he welcomes new regulations and probably caveats this with, "I'm really glad I'm not a CISO anymore. I think anything that pushes towards more transparency is a good thing." Sullivan in the past has pushed to give companies immunity if they are transparent early on during security incidents. I mean, that's an interesting approach to things. But then again, are you letting people off the hook? Like, your job is supposed to be reporting and solving problems and whatever. If you've got negligent practices, I don't think you should get away with it because you told everybody that you fucked up. So as I always do, I'll put the links to this stuff in here when I'm done, and you guys can, judge for yourself. But it is what it is. Okay, I would be remiss if I didn't talk about the Okta thing that's going on. I mean, if you've read the blogs and the publications from Okta's CISO, he's doing a really good job of at least telling you what's going on. He even puts like links to the after action report and those things in there. I don't know if he's going to swing for this. I don't know if the SEC is going to come after him, the FTC or whatever else. It's very possible. But we'll see where that plays out. But again, back to the thing that, I mean, I and lots of other people who are way smarter than me and better looking than me, which is a low bar, have said is like, here's the deal. Anytime a company says no data was affected, start the clock. Like, just right then, right there, start the clock. You can count down the number of days till they come back and go, oops, well, we meant some of this data. Oh, and well, 30 days later, we want this data. It's too fast to respond knee-jerk and say nobody got nothing, because no one breaks into a bank, goes to all the work, especially on a company like Okta, to do what they got to do and find things, and nothing gets taken. You don't break in and go, wow, look at all that money, like all that stuff laying around. I should leave. No, you take shit. That's why you're doing the crime in the first place. Okta said on Tuesday that hackers stole information on all users of its customer support system, all users in a network breach 2 months ago. The San Francisco-based company notified customers that it has determined hackers downloaded a report containing data, including names and email addresses of all clients that use its customer support system. Now, is that like earth-shattering, crazy, super valuable information? Meh, 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 kind of, sort of not, whatever. But it still is a data breach. Okta shares slumped in October. They're probably going to slump again. So maybe if you're going to buy them on the bounce, now's the time. And here's the statement from Okta. While we do not have direct knowledge or evidence that this information is being actively exploited, we have notified our customers that this file is an increased security risk. Now, I'm not endorsing anybody or whatever else. I'm just saying that there are companies out there beyond Identity's one that has like this thing they call like an Okta health check. You can go run it and see if your stuff is configured the way that it ought to be and find out if there's a problem. And I believe it's free. So why not go use said free stuff to fix a problem that could be a problem? That would be proactive. That would be smart. God forbid we do something like that. I mean, maybe this, my own snark in here is getting so bad that I'm making myself like, Jesus Christ, that dude is cynical. But I mean, it's hard not to be, isn't it? I think it just keeps, I don't know, ice skating around the actual topic of the problem. But all I can do is vomit into the digital space and hope people are willing to, be the baby birds and chew up some of that. That sounds disgusting. Anyway, all right. So the Sports Illustrated, this article was in Futurism. I hate to be the told you so guy, but I did write about this in a book I published a few years ago, about deepfakes and fake authors and fake narratives and whatever. So Sports Illustrated published articles by fake AI-generated writers. Now, the publishers here, Maggie Harrison, the author of this article, says, we asked them about it and they deleted everything. Here, let me read you a little bit of this. So there was nothing in Drew Ortiz's author biography at Sports Illustrated to suggest that he was anything other than human. According to his biography, Drew had spent much of his life outdoors. He's excited to guide you through his never-ending list of the best products to keep you from falling behind the perils of nature, it read. Nowadays, there's rarely a weekend that goes by where Drew is not camping, hiking, or just back on his parents' farm. The only problem, and this is their article, outside of Sports Illustrated, Drew Ortiz didn't seem to exist. He had no social media presence, no publishing history, and even more strangely, his profile photo on Sports Illustrated was for sale on a website that sells AI-generated headshots. Whoops. Where he described himself as a, where he was described as a neutral white young adult male with short brown hair and blue eyes. And there's the picture, and you can look at it, and that looks like pretty fake shit. Ortiz is not the only AI-generated author published by Sports Illustrated. Again, this is them. Don't come at me. I'm just reading what they wrote here. According to a person involved with the creation of the content who has to be kept anonymous. There's a lot, this insider told this particular author. I was like, what? This is ridiculous. This person does not exist. At the bottom of the page for these authors, there would be a photo of a person, some fake description of them, like, oh, John lives in Houston. He loves yard games and hanging out with his dog, Sam, and stuff like that. The AI author's writing sounds like it was written by an alien. One Ortiz article, the AI-generated author, for instance, said, warned that volleyball can be a little tricky to get into, especially without an actual ball to practice with. According to another person involved in the creation of Sports Illustrated content, who also asked to be anonymous, it's not just the author's headshots that are AI generated. At least the articles, at least most of the articles themselves were churned out using AI as well. The content is absolutely AI generated, no matter how much they, being Sports Illustrated, say it's not. And this author, the publisher, Futurism, reached out and said, after we reached out with questions to the magazine publisher, the AI generated authors disappeared miraculously overnight from the Sports Illustrated site with no explanation. That doesn't seem suspicious or nothing. Yeah. Right. Sometime this summer, for example, the AI author Ortiz disappeared from Sports Illustrated site entirely. His profile page instead redirected to that of a Sora Tanaka, again, a quote person with no online record or history or social profile or whatever. And Tanaka's profile is for sale on the same website where you would get the one for the fake Ortiz. And she is described as joyful Asian young adult female with long brown hair and brown eyes. So, I mean, this is a major publication that is being accused of, because this is not a court of law, being accused by another publication of using AI fake people to generate AI fake content. And then they're selling that. Not sure if you're aware of this, because I don't know if many people have a subscription anymore, but you do have to pay to get the, you know, pseudo pornographic pics you get from the Sports Illustrated swimsuit and whatever else. And you know, for the actual content, and it's all being, not all, but a lot of it's being generated by fake is what it appears. This should be concerning. I would think so. I don't know about you, but if I was paying for a subscription service and it turned out that it was fake and it was generated by AI, I'd be a little perturbed, probably more than perturbed. On top of this, and most folks saw this article, tech conference, and this is in Futurism as well by Victor Tangerman, tech conference canceled after using AI to generate fake women speakers. And the best part of this thing is the way that this bonehead got caught. So let me just read this quickly. An organizer in an upcoming software and developer conference called DevTernity has been accused of cooking up fake women speakers featured on the event's website, headshots and all. It looks like a horrifically misfired attempt to pad out the apparent diversity in a heavily male-dominated space, a hypothesis the event's organizer, Edward Zivos, I think, has denied. The bizarre development triggered a resounding outcry, leading to high-profile engineering leaders from the likes of Microsoft and Google to bow out of the conference. So it's kind of funny that they were already engaged there, and then they found out that this was all fake and probably was using some of their servers to generate the fake shit, and then they left. And then they canceled the whole conference. The profiles, the exclusively female speakers featured made up names, titles, and even AI generated headshots. There may be a dozen core Ethereum contributors in this world, and I have not heard any of them. So basically somebody else knew that these were all fake. And the funny thing is, like, I read through the rest of it. There's a 404 media page, which, Elliot Volkman, shared with me, that shows the IP logging stuff that goes on here. And this is where it's kind of funny, because shows the account that was used to create these AI generated people. The IP address is coordinated with Zivos. Some of the account's captions are also word for word copies from his own LinkedIn post. In short, the evidence is pretty damning, and giving Zeebo's own content is not exactly far-fetched to assume he's trying to pad out diversity of his since-canceled conference by inventing fake speakers. So don't generate fake people to pad out your conference and get people there that don't exist, and you're only hurting women by being a douche with fake douchery, if that's a thing. AI-generated douchery? Something like that. Okay. Coming up on the 30-minute mark here. So lastly, what I wanted to get into is I did say that you guys will be able to access some demo content. I will put the links up on here. This is from Banyan Security. Literally, all you got to do is go click it, drop in, and go play with the software. It's Banyan stuff. The instructions for use are there. Go off and have a field day. You can use this stuff, connect it, whatever else. You'll notice that there's a timer running at the top of it. So when you're done, it's going to nuke the entire session all the way back to disk. And then whatever you had used in there has gone away and someone else gets to jump on it. So you don't have to configure anything. You don't have to worry about your usernames and passwords or your connections. You can test drive this thing just like you would test drive a Ferrari if you went to the Ferrari dealer. We just toss you the keys and you go have a good day. And if you wreck it, well, this is virtual, so it'll reload in about 15 seconds anyway. Again, thank you, Banyan Security, for doing that. And folks, you know, if you're interested in what like ZTNA, SWIG, and all those things do when they're combined together, check this link out and go play with it yourself. That's what a real demo is supposed to do. Not, hey, just talk to my salesperson. You just go try the software. The real software, not some glorified fucking PowerPoint that you click through. Anyway, as always, stay smart, stay safe, stay secure. I'll catch you on the next one. And if you're around December 10th and 11th in Austin, come by and see us at the Cybersecurity Marketing Con. It's going to be a great event. Show up, say hi. You don't want to miss it. Good people there as well. And then one more thing before we go. In February is Zero Trust World. Go to Zero Trust World. It's going to be cool. Danny gives away really great stuff like fucking cars and things. So show up. Anyway, if I don't talk to you guys out there before the holidays, God bless, and I'll catch you on the next one. Disclaimer, the information in this podcast episode, aka episode, is provided for general information purposes only. By listening to this episode, you understand that this is not specific technical guidance from the host. No information contained in this episode should be construed as security advice from the author, host, or guest, nor is it intended to be a substitute for security advice on any particular subject matter. No listener of this episode should act or refrain from acting on the basis of any information included in or accessible through this episode without seeking the appropriate technical or other professional advice on the particular facts and circumstances that are discussed. This podcast is for informational purposes only. All views expressed therein are those of the host and his guest and should not be considered as being endorsed by nor related to the host or the guest's employers.